and welcome to Goblet of Wine, a drunken Harry Potter podcast. I'm Charlie.
And I'm Hannah, and we're two 20-somethings rereading our favourite childhood book with added alcohol and cynicism.
In this episode, we'll be discussing Chapter 3 of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Our aim was to get further than Chapter 3, but unfortunately both me and Charlie got drunk and emotional, so we discussed one chapter in great length with great banter.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. So we hope you enjoy this episode.
So jumping straight into it.
Charlie, what are you drinking today?
I am drinking raspberry flavoured vodka.
And I, in the true spirit of this podcast, am drinking wine. In future, we will endeavour to drink the same thing, especially when we set up a Patreon to pay for our alcohol.
Yeah, so if anyone is ever going to listen to this, we have a genius idea where we have a Patreon, and if you give us money to fund the alcohol, then you get to pick what alcohol we drink. Sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Combinations.
Yeah, like you can pick us the worst thing and we'll drink the same thing. But at the moment, we have to drink what we both have in the back of our cupboards because we're both poor. So I'm drinking wine my mum bought me when she came to stay as payment for her coming to stay.
And I'm drinking raspberry vodka that was on offer.
Yeah, but what you are drinking it out of is a Harry Potter goblet that I've given you.
It literally is, and it's on a Slytherin mat thing.
So we are starting off with Chapter 3, The Letters from No One. So it's now the summer holidays, and the first thing I notice is Harry talks about primary school. Isn't it weird to think of Harry in a normal school?
It is, yeah. I think it's weird to think of any wizard in a normal school because this is never really clarified.
Yeah.
Did Ron just go to a normal primary
school? I assumed he was raised at home because Mrs. Weasley doesn't work. But two parents have to work for money reasons. I mean, maybe we're thinking of this from an attitude of a time period where both parents have to work.
I'm thinking of, like, we've never heard of two wizarding parents working and therefore what happens to the children.
Yeah, but
and
we know that in general... Sorry, I interrupted you. But we know that in general the wizarding world is quite behind compared to the muggle one. So that's why I'm thinking it's quite archaic if the women stay home to work.
Yeah, they're very much in like a patriarchal family system.
And I think we'll definitely talk about this more as the books go on and become more kind of like progressive and talk about deeper subjects. But actually, family unit-wise, we don't hear of many women working. Like, immediately Amelia Bones came to my head, but that's a very minor character.
Umbridge.
But the teachers are all husbandless, childless women.
They're my future.
I mean, we'll definitely talk about this as it goes on, but I am really interested in the way, like, because J.K. Rowling is a feminist, and, like, it is set up in a kind of... Because she says that magic takes away the need for men to be kind of more successful than women because it takes away a need for physical power. But the one family structure we see, the woman doesn't work, which is amazing as a choice because Mrs. Weasley is making a choice. But if there's no standardised primary school for wizard children, what happens when both parents need to work?
Yeah, I think, because I think it's safe to assume that they're homeschooled. But then how does that work? Like, I've always been really irritated by how do they pick up basic things like math, which regardless of whether you're a wizard or a muggle, you need to know basic, you know, things like potions and what's the other one?
The one, Hermeneutics, arithmancy. It's maths.
Exactly. So you need to know, like, even a bit more than the basic principles. So that irritates me. Does it just get kind of passed down between wizards or do some go to primary? I don't know.
Yeah, is there a standardised wizarding primary school?
You assume that they don't, or muggle studies wouldn't be a thing, basically.
Yeah, like, and I assume that there's a lot of wizarding families who would find it extremely offensive if their child were suggested to go to a muggle primary school, but there doesn't...
Yeah, like, sure as shit, Draco didn't.
Yeah, but Ron doesn't know any of the other pupils, so there's obviously no wizarding primary school. It's just a really interesting thing to think about. And I think it's the kind of thing where J.K. Rowling started the series without ever thinking about it, and then it became an issue.
You know, it could have been a one-off, like, small book, not expanded on. In the end, it ended up with all this world building.
Yeah. I have literally written down, sick burn from Harry to Dudley. This is about the toilet thing.
That's my first note. Yay! My first note is the toilet's never had anything as disgusting as your head down it. Harry is a savage.
That is sassy AF.
Oh, like, my God.
I can think of that could have come back now. So yeah. For an 10-year-old, he's 10.
Harry is consistently a savage, though.
Yeah.
And this is the first, like, this is why I wrote it down, not just because it's a sick burn, but this is the first time that we see Harry being an absolute savage.
And he just gets more savage as the books go on. And this is something the films completely cut out, his savagery. And we will get to some of the lines in later books, which had me cry laughing.
There's no need to call me Professor.
There's no need to call me Sir Professor. Like, literally, the sickest burn. We will get
Harry
to that.
Harry goals.
The toilet has never had anything as horrible as your head down it. It might be sick.
It's just so quick.
Could you come up with that as a 10-year-old? No. Because I can, I'd be like...
And even if I could, it would take me about 5 days of not brainstorming.
So, sick burn Harry, thank you. Next, I have a note, and you can interrupt me if I'm moving further ahead than you. I have a note about Dudley is being sent to a private school, whereas Harry is being sent to the local comprehensive. Obviously, many, many people are sent to their local comprehensive. That is how most schools work in England. You're sent to your local comprehensive. But I think it's quite an interesting, like, look into the Dursleys' life, because based on where they live... they are lower middle class. Now, I don't want to offend anyone by saying this. I am going off traditional English class systems, which are archaic and no longer relevant.
Yeah.
But if I had to put them in one, they are lower middle class.
Okay.
Therefore, them sending him to a private school is kind of them... It's... one working parent... I don't know if he owns Grunnings. I think he just works for Grunnings.
He does. He's a director.
Okay, he's a director. So they aren't spending above their means. But they like to think they are higher up in life than maybe they are. And I'm saying this very in terms of the archaic English class system. I'm not saying this in terms of people can't send their kids to private school if they're not upper class. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that... they want the best for their child, even if that does mean spending a huge amount on private schools.
So this is interesting because I actually didn't make notes on this, even though I had a lot of thoughts rereading it and have in the past as well. Mm. And I just want to put a disclaimer here. This, what I'm about to say, I'm speaking to the rules that we have about in class in England, which are not actually accurate, but we very much have... things that are seen as lower class, things that are seen...
Lower means working. We should say working class.
Lower working class, things that are seen as middle class, and things that are seen as upper class.
Mm-hmm,
And for me, the way that the class is signalled with the Dursleys has always been incredibly mixed.
It is.
Things, for instance, like the obesity. That is something that is always very signalled... Obviously, this is not something I agree with or think.
Oh, accurate, no, definitely.
But obesity in England is signalled as something working class.
Yeah, which is, by the way, wrong, completely wrong. And if any listeners are listening from around the world, we are not saying this is the correct way to view it. We are just saying the typical, stereotypical, archaic view in England is that if you are obese, you're working class.
Yeah. And it's wrong, but we're purely talking about kind of like stereotypes and signalling. And Petunia being very gossipy and nosy, that's signalled as working class. Obesity is signalled as working class. Having a naughty child is signalled as working class.
100%, yeah.
However, going to a private school, that's signalled as upper middle class.
Upper middle class, yeah. To me, it reads as the Dursleys came from families of working class people, and they've managed to... get into what is signalled as the middle class, and they still feel very like, oh, we're trying to fit in. Because they're very people who want to fit in, and therefore for them, sending Dudley to a private school is a status symbol.
Yeah, and I think that's
more
accurate.
More than wanting them to get a good education, it's a status symbol.
It is, and I can definitely think of families like that growing up who come from a working class background and... strive for more and spend beyond their means and focus their spending on things that are outwardly flashy as opposed to reality. And there's nothing wrong with that. Spend your money as you wish.
Oh, 100%.
But yeah, I think there's always been incredibly mixed signalling in her writing as to what class the Dursleys are.
Yes.
You know, they live in Surrey. He's a director at a company. Dursley goes to private school, but then there's a lot that they also, she also writes that is associated with being working class.
Yeah.
So it's just like that, you know, there's nothing wrong or right either way, but it's just always incredibly mixed and it's really interesting. And I definitely see it as potentially like a very like kind of new money thing.
Oh yeah. I see it as a new money thing.
Yeah. Like spending potentially beyond their means, choosing their spending, you know, we never see them as going on a summer holiday. You know, we know that Harry has spent the occasional days with, what's the squib's name?
I think they mentioned that he has spent weeks there when they wanted to go on a holiday, but it's not kind of explicitly said that, okay, like they're like long periods of time. I could be remembering that wrong.
Yeah.
But there's definitely mentions of cars as a status symbol.
Yeah.
And we will come back to this when it's explicitly said that cars are a status symbol, because I know there are chapters which more explicitly say that. But there for is. Cars to be a status symbol, for me, it's trying to prove yourself in a certain category.
Yeah. And yeah, I want to say the reason that me and Hannah are discussing this is because it's interesting from a writing and literature point of view. We don't give a shit what class the Dursleys are, frankly.
Not at all.
But it is interesting and it has bearing.
Yeah, and we will also, in later episodes, go more into their obesity and fatness and how that's portrayed in the books. Because in the first books, it's cartoonish, but later on, it becomes quite offensive. And we will go into that more in later episodes.
Yeah, it's definitely coded as obesity, as parallel to villainry.
Yes, 100%. And we will delve into that more. But we've got another long tangent.
So,
letters start arriving. So the first letter arrives in just the regular post. And this is the bit that grinds my gears no end. Harry, my dear, you know what the Dursleys are like. You have lived with them for 10 years. Why didn't you put that fucking letter in your cupboard to read later?
He's 11 years old.
He's 10.
He's never 10.
Mm.
Even worse. He's never had a letter before. He doesn't know what it's about.
Yeah.
And, like, why would you? Like,
no,
why,
I know,
why
I did write.
Like, he probably thinks he's got a library card or something.
Yeah, I did write. He's so shocked he's being stupid.
Yeah.
He isn't thinking it through.
Yeah, like, I don't, like, we think that in hindsight, but I think if you've got a letter, I don't know why you would think to hide it. But I'm more like, they can't possibly tell Muggleborn students that they're wizards.
No,
so why did they try with Harry?
So, no, because Dumbledore says he explained everything in the letter, and he expected, this is one of Dumbledore's main oversights, he expected Petunia to tell him everything. Whereas the Muggleborns, it's hinted that a teacher comes around and explains it
to them.
They must
do.
So I assume McGonagall goes round. I assume it's mostly McGonagall. I very much assume that.
Imagine if it's Snape.
Lol. I very much assume McGonagall went around to Hermione's house and explained everything, and I would love J.K. Rowling to write that. Like, there's a lot of things I don't want her to write because I don't want her to ruin the series, but there's some things that don't relate to the plot where I just want her to write it. And a chapter of McGonagall,
I want to see it acted.
Oh, do you?
By the originals.
By the original actors. McGonagall explaining to Hermione's parents that she's a witch would be, like, an amazing scene. But yeah, it was a massive oversight on Dumbledore's part that Petunia would explain it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that I buy that it was an oversight. Honestly, like, do we not just think that maybe Dumbledore just wanted to cause a bit of drama?
Well, I have this later on about the drama of the letters, so
yeah.
Then moving on.
But hang on.
Oh no, go.
I have a really cute point.
Okay.
Okay, so like, you know how everyone wanted to receive their Hogwarts letter when they turned 11?
I have a story to tell about this, yes.
Do you remember how much it killed you?
Oh my god, that summer, you can tell your story after me, I'm sure you have a story, but so there's people that say the letter arrives on your 11th birthday. Oh no, it arrives in the summer. And I remember sitting on a swing so I had a park backing onto my garden, and I had a gate that went into the park, so I used to go there a lot, and I remember sitting on the swing, and it was around probably mid-July. In between primary school and secondary school. I was really nervous about going to secondary school. I was only going with a couple of friends from my area. And I remember just sitting on the swing and thinking, I know it's not going to happen. Hannah, you're 11. Like, you know it's not going to happen at this point. You're old enough to know this isn't going to happen. But a little part of my brain, a tiny little part, just thought, I just want it. I just need it. I just want the letter. Just want the letter.
I think my brain was like, I know I'm not going to get a Hogwarts letter, but I mean, like, the context of the time, like, you know, I was recently had known that I was dyslexic. I was, you know, progressing at the time when I was 11 with my reading and writing, but I was incredibly unpopular in primary school. And I wasn't good in my classes, and I just wanted something desperately,
anything to change.
I was like, and I knew that I wouldn't get a Hogwarts letter, obviously I knew, but for some reason I was like, well, if anything's ever going to happen, it will happen between primary school and high school, which is such a dumbass way of thinking.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But yeah, but, like, for some reason I just thought it would happen then, partly because of Harry Potter, partly because it was just changing, and I was like, high school is a fresh start. No, I'd still be obnoxious, annoying. Fuck.
Yeah,
so yours makes mine seem less impressive. But anyway, so...
No. It doesn't.
Yeah, so I think this was either in my first or second year of university. And my mum used to occasionally send us care packages just full of, like, you know, food and snacks. And cute things. And one day she, like, messaged me and my sister and she was like, has the post come yet? We're like, no. And the next day she's like, has the post come yet? We're like, no. What are you, like, what are you on about? I just thought, like, oh, she sent us a care package or, like, a letter or something. Like, she used to do it all the time. And then, like, after, like, a few days, I got the post. She'd used some website and she'd sent us, like, a Hogwarts letter. And this was university for any non-British viewers. Second or first year, I would have been 19 or 20.
Aww.
And she literally, rather than even just sending it herself, she had paid on some website... out of nowhere, like, just out of nowhere, like, she must have just looked it up or seen it somewhere and sent both me and my sister Hogwarts letters when we were, like, 19 or 20 years old. And I think I, like, cried.
Yeah, that is the sweetest thing.
Oh, yeah, it's just so cute because the site was clearly meant for 11-year-olds.
I don't care, that's the sweetest thing.
It's so cute. I think I kept it. I think I should have bought it. I didn't think.
So,
okay. Harry and Dudley listen through the door.
They do, yes.
And Vernon says an important line that I really want to talk about.
Yeah, please do, please do.
He says, we'll stamp out that dangerous nonsense.
Okay.
Can you guess where I'm going with this?
So he says, in the context, he says, we swore when we took him in we'd stamp out that dangerous nonsense.
It's homophobic. Reading this as a bisexual woman, like, it's, like, this line was so clear to me that this, the whole stamp it out thing, it really does seem like a metaphor, which we know that J.K. Rowling uses for when people try and stamp out the gayness and have all the kind of, like, you know, gay conversion therapy camps and classes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and, like,
throughout the book she's using metaphors for a lot of different situations.
Yeah, but, like, the thing is, because you didn't read it this way.
No, so, yeah, like, I completely glossed over this line as, like, a relatively straight person. I believe in this Kinsey scale, but, like, as a relatively straight person, I completely glossed over this line. But you know, as a different sexual orientation,
yeah,
saw this in a different interpretation, which is amazing. Like, that's what reading's all about, like, interpreting things in different ways.
Yeah. And, you know, I have read and listened to on audiobook Harry Potter so many times since a child, but this is the first time where I have paid attention, I would say, since my childhood, reading Harry Potter has been through audiobooks when I've been struggling to sleep. This is the first time I properly have read it in moments where it's anything more than, like, anxiety needing to read it.
Yeah, you're reading it in a different way.
So this is my first proper reading in adulthood, and I couldn't read this line in any other way.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge of what J.K. Rowling has ever made public, she is straight. I don't know if that's a reality to what I know or a reality to what she's made public, but to my knowledge, she is straight.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is intended as a metaphor or not, because to me, if you assume as a straight reader that this line is nothing, then maybe she didn't mean it as a metaphor.
No, but the way it's, the phrasing of it is very specific. It's not just like, when we swore when we took him in, he would never deal with that magic nonsense. It's when we swore when we took him in, we'd stamp it. It's the word stamp it out. It's
and
like
nonsense.
And it's like getting rid of something that is integral to someone's person. Getting rid of something which they cannot help, which they are...
That they can't change.
Which they can't change, exactly. And yeah. It's a very... Stamp It Out is very... It's quite an aggressive line.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is very reminiscent of things I've only seen in necessarily the media or things I've heard from friends who are gay or bisexual and things like that, of things they've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But...
And it's a really good reading.
Yeah. For me... There was literally no other way to ever read this line.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure other people feel the same.
Yeah, and to me, this is, like, potentially one of the most upsetting lines in the entire series. Like, honestly, reading this for the first time and...
And I'm sure we might find more as you go along, like, rereading it as an adult in this mindset. And this is interesting that you've come across this, and it'll be interesting to see what other lines, like, you or I come across as and interpret in that sort of way.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, I can see why that's a really, really upsetting line. Now you've said it, I totally view it in that way.
It is, because, you know, I mean, obviously, like, well, not obviously, but for readers, like, I'm very lucky. My parents, you know, would never try and make me go through conversion therapy. But, you know, I've read, and it's not the same as experiencing it, I've read accounts of people that have, and being able to sympathise to them because I'm bisexual. So to read this, you can kind of... imagine as a bisexual person more than you can as a straight person.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky to not have gone through it, but just even the idea to me is really, really upsetting.
Yeah.
And I just can't deal. I can't deal with this line.
So have a sip of vodka and we'll move on.
Yeah.
Not to, like, bulldoze over your bisexual point, but let's move on.
Steamrolling over your sexuality.
As a straight person, I'm just steamrolling over your sexuality.
Yeah,
I'm
going to change the subject.
Okay. Harry's moved. Mr. Dursley takes a letter, and Harry's moved in Dudley's second bedroom. And I just want to talk about children with second bedrooms. And I also want to talk about the fact that, like, I know the Dursleys are horrible people. Like, they're horrible people. But what person owns a 4-bedroom house, only needing 2 of the bedrooms, and keeps their nephew under the stairs? Like, how is that benefiting you? Like, shouldn't you have always been in that... given the box room, if you don't like him, like, fair... Like, not fair enough, but... You know what I mean? Like, your
never
child...
Never become a parent, Hannah.
I know, like, literally. Give your child that you don't like the box room. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you give your younger child, typically, like, I know as the older sibling, you're the younger sibling, but I know as the older sibling, I always get the bigger bedroom. So I understand, like, Harry getting the smaller bedroom because he's younger and he's also, like, not the firstborn because he's not their child, but don't put him in the cupboard when you have 4 bedrooms.
I know, it was a bit for me when they're like, oh, so one was a spare room.
And one was Dudley's second bedroom. Like, you have 2 going, like, spare here.
It's bad enough if it's 3-bed, but, like, there was literally a spare bedroom
If it was 3-bed, I'd kind of be like... Okay, like, fine, one was for Marge when she comes around. But it's the fact it's a 4-bedroom house.
And what this also just made me think of is, like, is Dudley a beauty vlogger?
That he needs a fake bedroom.
Yeah.
That's so good. I love that. Like, people who have
filming room.
And speaking of Dudley's second bedroom, do you, as a story that you read or listened to as a young child, do you imagine the Dursley's house in any particular way, or as any house in particular? Because obviously, when you're a child and you read it, you don't, like, make up a house. You probably put it into a house that you know very well. So my grandparents lived in a very traditional, semi-detached, 4-bedroom house. One of the bedrooms was a box room house. Very traditional, mid-1960s build, semi-detached house. So the Dursley's house is my grandparents' house. That is the layout of it.
I really hate that I can't picture any of the characters or scenes from the books without thinking of the films.
Okay.
So for me...
Some things are very bulldozed by the films because I did view them at similar times, but the Dursley's house is one that is my grandparents' house.
However, we never see the second bedroom with Dudley's stuff in.
No, we only ever see it with just Harry in.
And I do have a mental image of that, but it's not one I could describe.
Okay.
But I do
It's mostly
have
the downstairs. Not the upstairs is based on the film, which is a bit weird, but the downstairs is my grandparents' house.
For me, it's the opposite.
Okay.
The downstairs, for me, we see more of in the film.
I know, but I think it's when I was listening to the audiobooks, the way they're describing it was like a traditional semi-detached house in a cul-de-sac, I was like, my grandparents are, like,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I had a note saying, I love the childish wit of the first book. So, the letters keep arriving, and Mr. Dursley is trying to stop the letters arriving in any way he can think of. So he's boarding up all the cracks in the house, and there's a line about him trying to knock a bit of wood in with a piece of fruitcake rather than the hammer, because he gets confused. And something about that is so simple and so funny, yeah. Because as a tired person, as a tired adult, I would try to, like, hammer something with a bit of fruitcake if I was tired.
The fruitcake, for me, wouldn't survive long enough to be used as a hammer.
I don't like fruitcake.
To be fair, I don't either. However, like, food is food.
Food is food. When you get to an adult and you realise that you have less money than when you were a teenager, you're like, oh, I'll eat anything if it's free.
Anything. Yeah, for me, like, the thing that stuck out to me is it's a bit when all of the letters are arriving. I think it's when all of the letters are arriving, or it might just be when a couple arrive, and both Harry and Dudley try and get the letter, and there's a line that, like, Harry straight up leaps on Vernon,
yeah,
and
attempts to strangle him.
No, he does.
He leaps on his back.
Yeah, and he, like, straight, like, tries to choke the fucker.
And Dudley is, like, beating them both with his stick.
But, like, you understand, like, a comedic fight scene, but, like, imagine being, like, 10 years old and trying to, like, choke out your abusive, like...
It shows you how more cartoonish this verb...
But, it,
like,
is.
The more I reread this book, and we'll get onto this in later chapters as well, it's so cartoonish at points.
It's not realistic. You would not try and strangle the person
I
that
understand,
uses
like,
you.
Jumping on their back, but literally trying to strangle
what
them.
What was he hoping to achieve?
I don't know.
It's so dark.
The letters keep coming. They keep coming. And at one point it says that they're inside some eggs.
I love it so much.
And number one... I don't know how you magic letters inside of eggs, but wow. Number two, these letters are signed by McGonagall. So what I can only assume is McGonagall is like, we can tell Harry hasn't read the letter. So what I shall do is try to get them into the house. Now, how should I do that? I'll put them inside eggs. Is that a bit weird? No. Am I drunk? Well, yes, of course I am. There's none of the children
in
here.
I'm McGonagall.
I'm Scottish, so I'm drunk all the time when the children aren't
Haggis.
Here. Haggis. Some whiskey. I honestly, like, imagine McGonagall, like, drunk on whiskey, being like, yes, I shall put letters inside eggs. And Dumbledore is like, we should maybe send Hagrid to check he's okay. And she's like, no, this one will work. I'll put letters inside some eggs. It'll be great. Yeah. Harry will find
them. They make him cook the breakfast. It's fine.
Like, this is again where it just goes too whimsical and too weird. Like, mm-hmm. The letters are inside eggs.
I love it.
I wish
all letters came within eggs.
So then, to get away from the letters, well, I've written to get away from the otters, because for context, I couldn't find my notebook to make notes on this chapter, so I was using my iPad. I hate autocorrect and don't look at it. So it says, to leave to get away from the otters.
I frequently travel the country trying to get away from otters. They follow me.
Otters follow me. That should be our catchphrase for this podcast. The otters follow me.
Yes.
Okay, great.
It's the episode title.
Hashtag the otters follow me. So to get away from the otters, they go to this random hotel and then they go to the shack on the rocks.
Yes. So I have a note about this.
Yes.
So I really, really love this logic where he's like, well, you know, moving about the country, going to a hotel hasn't shaken the wizards off. But for some reason, if I cross the water, that will do the job.
Letters can't cross water, Charlie.
Yeah, no, my note is, much like White Walkers, wizards can't swim. Unless, of course, they're somehow then swimming to tie chains to a dragon
and then they
the
can
water.
Swim.
And then suddenly they can swim.
And then suddenly they can swim.
Yeah, so according to Vernon, wizards can't swim.
The thing with Vernon's is, it's over practicality. It's like, oh, these people who put letters in fucking eggs. But do you know what they won't do?
Cross
they won't deliver
the
it on,
water.
No, but the first thing is, do you know what they won't do? They won't deliver it on Sunday, because Sunday is a sacred day.
Yes.
Sunday is God's day. The Dursleys are in no way religious that I can tell. But Sunday is God's day, and they will not deliver letters on Sunday. When he realises that the holy sanctity has been crushed and they will deliver letters on Sunday, he's like, well, they won't cross the water, will they?
Yeah, it's like that level of faith in bureaucracy where he to assume that they won't deliver on Sunday is to assume that the post office, that Royal Mail, has been putting the letters inside eggs.
Okay, so the chapter ends with someone knocking on the door and Harry is counting down to his birthday. And I just wrote, this is really good suspense for children, just someone knocking on the door. I know it's so simple as adults, mm-hmm. but I remember as a child, I was like, who's knocking on the door? Yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah. So, I feel like we have the episode in one chapter.
Okay, listeners. I'm a bit pissed. Please shut up. Okay, listeners, so we thought we would cover three chapters in this episode, and turns out we only covered one. Partly because halfway through we had to pause because one of us was crying. You can guess which one in your own time.
Work it out. If you think you can guess who had the emotional breakdown.
At Goblet of Wine, tweet us which one you think had the emotional breakdown. So we're running this podcast as, rather than an amount of chapters, whatever takes about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So we are choosing to cut it off here.
Yeah, so I think we'll aim for like three chapters per episode, but if it gets to 45 minutes, then we're gonna try and cut it down.
Yeah, because we had some good chats, and there's some chapters coming up which not much happens, so we will kind of aim to whiz through them. But that is kind of the end of this chapter.
Yeah, like the moral of the story is we really enjoy the sound of our own voices, so we're not gonna censor ourselves.
For you.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening. And we will see you in the next episode for hopefully chapters 4-6, but who fucking knows with podcast.
Yeah, however
long it takes us to drunkenly talk about episodes. Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine.
Make sure to subscribe on your preferred podcasting app to listen to new episodes every fortnight.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Goblet of Wine to read our terrible social commentary on life.
And we'll see you next episode.
Bye. Bye.